Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Nicole Daigneault, who will be giving us an update on her yoga program. So, what's the latest with your yoga program?
Cam, where should I start? What would you like to ask me about first? Because there's so much, and you kind of know the different locations that you're connected to. And I'm talking about both at the university, the programs I run there. And I know you're on CJAM. And also through the Italian-Canadian Handicapable Association. And I'd like to know what you want to maybe talk about first. And we also have my programs at the Jackson Park Health Center. So hit me.
So you were telling me prior to the interview that you're sort of making things more user-friendly. What do you think some of the accessibility advantages would be someone with a mobility challenge who just wants to click and see, this is what the program's all about?
Well, and I'm making it more accessible to everybody. My one failing in all of this is being able to keep up with all of the ways we can get the word out. I find there's so many platforms that I don't even know where to start, but I've gotten some great guidance from some helpful people. And I feel that I've made just some nice, succinct ways for you to look at pictures, click on videos, read articles, go to links, both on my website. So that's cocoyoga.ca. And it's just packed full of information. And I tried to make it where every link will hook you up to the location, how to register for things, information about them. I'm really trying to do that for people. So cocoyoga.ca is a great starting place to find out about all of it. And then there's, of course, you know, the Italian-Canadian Handicapable Association links and the links to all the programs that are going on at the University of Windsor. And it's a huge, vast network. So I'm sure people will find it if they're interested. Just Google Coco and yoga in Windsor. That should open you up to a lot of different connections. Thank you so much, Cam, for letting me put that out there.
Of course. I'm curious, though, with the new year heading in pretty fast, it'll be your second or third year going in at the ICHA, and what do you foresee for the work that you're going to be doing in 2020? Do you see it extending, or... Do you see any changes or improvements?
Well, at the ICHA, the group that has started with me and has continued, I've got now students who I've seen from day one there, and they've continued on, and some new have joined, and some come and go. We've had a couple of different time changes over the couple of years, and it's hard to find exactly when it's great for everybody. But I hope that more and more people can find their way there and experience not only the yoga, but I'm just amazed by the entire ICHA program, all the different ways to get physically fit and to feel really part of a great group of people. It's a beautiful association, and I'm very honored to teach for them. That's Wednesdays at 4:45, and it's basically they keep it ongoing all through the year, and anyone can join in at any time. We have people who've been with me from the start, some who come and go, and new people joining anytime.
So what sorts of results have you seen this year in terms of success? I know yoga has lasting benefits of relieving pain and improving mobility. Has there been any success case that stands out for you from this year?
Well, my group on Saturday morning at 11:15 at the Jackson Park Health Center, they have been literally my starting group. When I began teaching the special needs classes in Windsor, it was 2012, and a few of the women who I see every Saturday morning at 11:15, I've been seeing them since 2012. Some of them are in their seventh year of practicing yoga every week with me. They are very dedicated. Their families are very dedicated. They've all become great friends over the years. The community is amazing. And as more and more people find my classes, I'm seeing more and more. There's so many friends and connections around the city. And, you know, I believe that's how the word has spread from that initial class.
Is there a particular case of someone that you've been able to help over the years that stands out for you?
Well, I'm currently working with a woman in a both private one-on-one session, and she comes to my group sessions. And she's actually my conspirator in my series of upcoming photos. People will start seeing her. She wanted something to hold in her hand, and she asked if we could do a flyer. So there's a nice flyer coming out about my classes at the Jackson Park Health Center and throughout the city. But I see her privately and in group, so it really gives us a chance twice a week to really work. And what I love hearing and what I'm hearing more of is the staff, the caregivers, the people behind the scenes who are seeing the improvements, they're noticing, and they're also doing some practice with her. They're asking me questions, and they're helping out with things like gentle reminders of taking a breath and things like that. So physically, she's become a lot more just focused and takes some deep breaths. She knows to do that. And physically, she now has this nice extension in her body, in her arms, in her spine, in her neck, even down to her toes, which have always been very, very kind of cramped up and tight and not, you know, not full extension of her limbs and really rounded when I first met her, really slumped down in her wheelchair about a year, maybe a year and a half ago I met her. And so it's just been a really beautiful thing. She now sits right up. She knows exactly what we're doing. She's very, very aware of how this is helping her. And from what I'm hearing, she's continuing on with that when I'm not with her, which is just amazing.
But that's the thing, though. Sometimes through this sort of instruction, the teacher gains something by it as well. Have you found that through teaching these students that you have changed in any of your perceptions or anything?
I have, what a question. Has it changed my perspective? I mean, these have been just remarkable years of really, and I love working with parents and caregivers too, because all together we're really communicating. We're really communicating. We are looking each other in the eyes. We are with our hands on, we are feeling the muscles, letting us know, okay, I can go there. I can take this extra breath. I can stay focused. We're just all learning so much and communicating so much. So I think all of us have had a new perspective. I've had caregivers just share to me things like, I didn't think she could do that. I didn't know that he could do that. And that is amazing, you know, when people are like, really? Yoga? Like thinking, how on earth could my client do yoga? They're in a wheelchair. And then they come and they realize through whether it's very, very subtle movements, vocal things we do, eye movements, gentle massage movements. We do it all, and the caregivers are doing yoga as well. I make sure they get stretched out as well. So we're all learning. We're all gaining a lot of perspective about what we can do and how we can help people and how nice human touch is and interaction and connection. And I think we're all learning a lot.
Thank you very much. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Kelly Runnels from Ensemble. So tell me a little bit about Ensemble.
Okay. Ensemble was founded about 20 years ago by two moms who had who have a child with an intellectual disability, and they felt that there was a need for a family support group that understand the importance of connecting to others. To other parents and family members to help cope with the challenges of raising a child with an intellectual disability and then supporting them as adults. And so we've been around since about 2000.
And what sort of supports do you typically provide?
It really varies depending on how we hear from families. It can be as simple as being a listening ear for families, directing them to the right resources if they're looking to find a support worker. We can see if we can help connect them with support workers or look for places to find them. As families are getting older, if they're dealing with estate planning, we try and connect them with lawyers who can address those things. So it really depends on what the parents are calling in with. Sometimes it's school issues. That's been a big one this fall. So it really varies depending on what we hear from families.
And how do you go about reaching out to these families?
We have a social media presence, so we're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram as well. We have our webpage, and we connect with families through local service providers like the local community livings and Children's First and, you know, John McGivney, all the agencies. So they know we're here, and so they'll often send families our way. And then word of mouth from parents to parent.
So what are some of the common challenges these individuals with intellectual disabilities face? You mentioned there are some school-related challenges. Can you elaborate a little?
Sure. One of the things we hear about with parents with school, one issue that they have is something called exclusion. So that's when their child is not allowed to come to school for a certain amount of time. Sometimes it's indefinite. It's not supposed to be. And so we'll hear from parents, and they'd like to know how to help with that, how they can go around resolving it. And so we can direct them to people who can help with that, how they can go about, you know, talking with the schools and things like that. So that type of thing, and the process of getting that resolved. So that's how we can help with that.
So, in your time with Ensemble, what's been the greatest success moment you've witnessed?
The greatest success. We work best, our greatest success is when we're connecting families and we're connecting two families to help them out. Often, parents and family members, they feel isolated, they feel alone, and we want to decrease that isolation. So, when we can bring families together so that they can just talk and learn from each other. Sometimes it's just as simple as sharing their stories. When we share stories, we learn from each other. Most recently, we had a social event for just moms that came out, and it was just an evening where we had a nice night out of you know, not worrying about our family responsibilities. We had a what we call a paint a memory board night at a local art studio in Kingsville. And it was just a nice night out for parents to get away and talk and connect with each other and learn that they're not alone. I mean, we know that, but sometimes it's good to talk with people one-on-one so that we can hear that. So that's been one of our most recent successes.
So if you could send any message to the community about why this work matters and why there's a greater need for awareness and inclusion, what would you say?
It matters because our sons and daughters, our siblings, are still not fully included in society. They're not receiving the supports we need. And by extension, families aren't receiving the supports we need so that we can support our family members. We always like to say we want our, you know, our sons and daughters, siblings, whoever our family member is, to have the best life possible. And sometimes the resources aren't there and families are tapped out trying to do this. So our work matters because we raise awareness, we connect people, and ultimately by helping the families, we help our family members with an intellectual disability to be more independent, less isolated, and really having the best life they can. So when we support families, we support the family members with an intellectual disability.
So what are the next steps in your work?
What are our next steps? Our next steps are we want to really make sure that we're focusing on meeting the needs of families so that they're less isolated, they can be recharged, they can have the right information to be able to do this. So we're still trying to figure that out. There are other family groups that offer information evenings, so we don't want to duplicate that work. We want to support that. So we kind of see ourselves filling the need of providing a place where parents can come and talk and share their stories, connect. So we want to be less, you know, we'll provide information, but we want to make sure that we're here to provide families a connection so that they're empowered and they can provide supports for their family members. So we, what that looks like, we're not quite sure yet, but that's what we want to do going forward.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay, no problem, Cam.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
The Windsor Youth Center is a free drop-in community center for homeless and at-risk youth in the Windsor, Essex area. The WYC assists people with many important things, such as replacing identification, resume writing, as well as providing meals, snacks, and a safe space for youth to come together. The Windsor Youth Center is located at 1247 Wyandotte Street East and is open Monday to Friday from 5 p.m. until 10 p.m. For more information, visit their website at downtownmission.com under the services or give them a call at 226-674-0006.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Nicole Daniel about the success of her yoga program over the past year, and from Kelly Runnels from Ensemble. This next segment of our show, we're going to hear a little bit about the Canadian Human Rights Commission. So, can you introduce yourself and tell me a little bit about your work?
Okay. So, my name is Joanne Leliève. I'm the new director of the Accessibility Unit at the Canadian Human Rights Commission. It is an exciting time for the Commission since we will be responsible to implement the Accessible Canada Act. So it is a new role for me. I just started not too long ago, and we're really excited about it.
So can you tell me a little bit about some of the provisions of the Act you're hoping to get in place?
Well, if we look at the Accessibility Act itself, it really signals a transformational shift. the way Canada is approaching disability and accessibility. And what we want to accomplish is make sure that it leads to a more consistent experience for accessibility across Canada. So what is really contemplated with the Act is that employers and service providers are creating accessibility plans to ensure that they think about accessibility right from the get-go in seven priority areas, or seven domains, if you want. So in employment, or the building environment, information and communication technology. One thing that is really interesting, too, is that it will take into account everything that falls under the CRTC or the CTA, so the Transport Canada Agency. So everything related to, you know, radio, TV programming, and so on, will be covered by that. It should also cover everything that touches the delivery of programs and services for the government and for, you know, regulated, federally regulated organizations, such as, you know, the banking industry, the transport industry. And, of course, it covers procurement. So we want to make sure that when organizations are buying technology, they make sure that it is accessible and that people can really use it to increase their access to information and employment.
So do you foresee any challenges in implementing the Act and making sure that accessibility is prioritized?
Well, I could see some challenges, of course. Challenges that we're facing right now is just to get a bit of consensus into what those accessibility plan will look like. We will have an organization working with us that will develop all of these standards. But we need to remember that this Act will cover over 18,000 employers. So the diversity of employers between small organizations versus a big crown corporation is so diverse that just for that piece, there will be some challenges in doing it. A second challenge I see is we need to make sure that persons with disability are fully involved in everything we do. So it's really this principle of nothing for us without us. And in order to do that, we need to consult. So think about it. If 18,000 organizations is approaching associations that are representing people with disabilities, it could lead to a kind of consultation fatigue. So we're really working eagerly to try to find options to make this easier for the community, because we want to make sure that this is a success.
So why do you think that the Accessible Canada Act was made a priority? Why human rights should include disability rights?
Well, human rights has always included disability rights. The commission was established in 77 or 78, and right from the get-go, the ground of disability was included in our human rights framework. It is included also, we're the federal watchdog when it comes to human rights, but there is also Human Rights Commission across Canada, and they all have disability as part of it. So it's been a preoccupation of all of us. I was looking at the stats recently, and over the last 10 years, we had over 4,207 complaints related to disability. So when you think about all of the individuals involved in these complaints and the family or the friends that are helping us, I mean, it's more than 4,000 people, right? In Canada, we know that 1 out of 5 Canadians is impacted for disability. So it's 20%. So we're not talking here, I'm always saying, we're not talking about special needs. we're talking about human needs. It is really mainstream, and we want, and this is why it was a priority of the government, and surely a priority for the commission.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay, thank you.
Of course. Disability rights are human rights, and this is not just some small segment of the population. Even if it was, if one person's affected, if one person's rights are trodden upon, that's too many. But the fact is, the statistics can't cover every type of disability or every related factor. It really does depend upon how loose and open your definition may be. To my mind, disability is anything that impedes, quote, normal functioning. Now, if you look at it from that framework, we all have something that makes us unique, makes us special. And the fact is, disability, it's everywhere. It touches every facet of life. And if we don't recognize that these are people with hopes, dreams, needs, and capabilities all their own, we're shortchanging ourselves. Take business, for example. A homogenized circle of old money just goes around and around and around. Money goes from A to B and back and forth. But are there new ideas? Are there new perspectives being offered? Are there people who are willing to come in and say, we can do better by this community? We can do better by society? We can actually take those ideals that we're so pleased with ourselves to announce in the public view. And behind closed doors, when it's actually day-to-day operations, we can have someone with a disability being a meaningful part of this work. And what that starts to do? Starts to shake things up a little bit, make real change. And honestly, somebody has to be first. I mean, it's fine to say, we're going to implement this new policy on accessibility. Somebody somewhere has to make sure it's actually working. That it doesn't just go on a surface level to say, yay, ain't we great, we put something in place. No, it has to go deeper than that. Day to day, affecting the guy who needs to catch an accessible bus to work, or B, to go to somebody who needs just a little support at the office. Someone to come in and say, yeah, we can modify your schedule based on when you're best able to work. Accommodations generally aren't that expensive and generally aren't that hard. Why does everyone take the stance initially that this is going to be difficult, this is going to be something that's going to complicate our lives? You think things are complicated for you as the person having to adjust a schedule or two, consider, what does it mean to someone whose whole livelihood depends on going to that office or doing that job? What does it mean to a person who actually wants to work and needs just a little human dignity and a little human respect to be able to do that? What does it mean, my friends? I know that it can come from many different standpoints, but essentially, it's either an inclusive ideal or it's an obligation. Person feels they have to have someone with a disability around and they have to make such changes to infrastructure and transportation if possible, odds are they're not going to have the greatest outlook on it. However, if it's someone who genuinely didn't know of these concerns and for the very first time opens their eyes and realizes this is someone just like me, but for a few minor differences. They're no less human than I. They're no less worthy of consideration than I. Most people are willing to open the door once they realize it needs opening. But it takes someone saying, take a nice, long look at what we can do better by. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.